and good luck.
Yes, sir, it's your boy, Big Vern. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. You heard?
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Murray of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening, it's Kevin Factor, and this is Foraging Ahead. LeBron James may be an artist on the basketball court, but off the court, he's just another gigantic multimillionaire. Can't take a photograph, can't play guitar, and he can't write a decent song. My guest tonight can do all three of these. Though why she's not a multimillionaire is beyond me. Bess Greenberg is a professional basketball player, a photographer whose work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, a multi-instrumentalist, and a singer-songwriter of remarkable depth and honesty. Bess is all these things and more, but she's primarily a clear-eyed explorer, an artist and an athlete of boundless passion, resilience, and optimism, who has fought through injury and loss and carries with her a sense of joy and wonder that is both hard-won and infectious. But she did make it difficult for me to decide on whether this show would be an interview show with music or a music show with interviews, so I just decided to have both. Tonight, we'll listen to a lot of music of Bess's. We'll talk basketball, photography, music, the artistic process, and some of the through lines in her work. The music we'll hear is from her album Pearl, and also from her upcoming EP with her band Kid Bess and the Magic Ring. And when you listen to the songs, it's not hard to hear the deliberate rhythms of a basketball pounding on blacktop. Bess Greenberg.
How would you describe yourself?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
I freelance in different ways with visual art or graphic design. My biggest passion at this time is definitely playing music and building and working with sound and writing songs. But I also work with my brother's family and take care of kids. I've been a teacher before moving here. So I'm someone who follows my intuition on what feels really good and always trying to find the right balance of things. So, I'm someone also who likes to keep changing, having new experiences. So I'm not one thing. I'm a bit of an explorer and still finding out.
Mm-hmm. So you started, what I found really interesting, and we'll talk about some of the through lines, I think, is that you started out as as a basketball player.
Yes, definitely.
Like basketball is
still am kind of
is huge in your life, and well, it's also your family. Right?
Yeah, basketball was definitely a way of life for me till I was 27,
mm-hmm.
26 or 27. My father, he'll be 83 soon, still plays the game, and me and my three older brothers grew up learning and being around the game through him. He was a coach and a player, and he coached in our high school that we went to in Vestal in upstate New York, and he shared the passion of the game with us. So I can't remember a time when out of my childhood where basketball wasn't around and wasn't a central thing of our movement and what we were doing. We were always going to a gym, always bouncing the ball, and it was always fun. It was just playtime. It was what we all did.
And was it true for all your brothers as
well?
Oh,
yes.
I mean, it was just family time around with the basketball.
Yeah, my father loved it so much, and he was a coach, so we would be, and he also ran Vestal Youth Basketball Organization. So we grew up going to that. That started, I think, there's an 8 and 9 year olds age group was the youngest. So I think we were starting that early because we were his kids. But we were always going to the gyms, always going to games. He towed us around with him. And basketball was, a way of life for us, for sure.
But like, what would you do when you went to the gym? You know, as an 8 year old or nine, like
I was a little well, me personally, and I can speak to my brothers. Well, I was definitely a little scrapper. So if there was an open gym for the adults, I would just go down. There'd be a ball on the side, and I'd be dribbling around, watching them play. Maybe one of the other adults brought their kid, and I could shoot around on the side or run out and shoot in between games, and. It was exciting to be around, and it was super fun, and we were really competitive and laugh about it, sometimes not laugh about it as siblings, but that was all part of it. We laugh about that even more as adults, you know?
Yeah, of course, now that you have a little perspective on it.
Yeah.
That's the thing about sports, especially team sports, is balancing that competitive drive, which is necessary, but also learning how to manage it and to limit it and then to work with a group.
And I think that's true not just with basketball. I think that basketball, one of the things that it gave me so much at a younger age was some understanding of competition, of my relationship to it. Am I being competitive with this person? Am I being competitive with myself? What has the most value for me to keep growing and move forward? And that moves, across mediums. So as a musician, you can experience the same kind of competitiveness, comparing yourself to other musicians. I think now I look at it, I like the idea of it's really about not at all other people doing their thing, but what my relationship to my own creating music is. And that there's a sense of competitiveness within myself to, and then you could also say it's like discipline within myself, competitiveness, setting a bar to a place where I know I want to grow and get better and not just stagnating at a certain thing, but that becomes competitive with myself. Like, that seems really challenging. That's intimidating. Could I do that? Can I try that instrument? Or could I make an album? Or could I do that? And it's a competitive thing with having some self-awareness to, yeah, I can do that. It's not about what anyone else is doing it. It's something I want to do and express for myself. It has nothing to do. And basketball helped form that sort of sense of competition and playing, I think, in me. Because I felt that same thing in basketball with that, all those experiences.
That growth mindset.
Yes.
Comes from basketball.
I think part of it does. Yeah, I mean, I approached basketball a certain way, and that seemed effective for me and brought me a lot of good feelings that I could carry, like that I could be proud of inside with working hard and having discipline towards something and being passionate, really loving it.
And seeing the results.
And seeing and feeling the results.
What's the difference?
Seeing the results would be that maybe I would say our statistics or awards and success on the basketball court by scoring or winning or feeling like you're better than the person you're playing against. Feeling them would be knowing that I sacrificed a lot and things were difficult and I pushed through, had injuries, could have given up, and could carry a sense of pride and feel comfortable within myself to go out into the world. Just carry that feeling inside that I'm capable.
I would wait for you if you ask me to. I would carry stone, I would anchor the ship all alone, I would run away from this town, I would carry your love. They hide away. I wish that I could say. Ask me to. I would carry stone. I would anchor the ship all alone. I would run away from this town. I would carry your love. Pearls they hide away. I wish that I could stay.
Basketball high school, obviously yeah. Did well in school. He got into SUNY Binghamton,
yeah,
right, and played basketball for Bearcats.
Yeah, we became the Bearcats and had an amazing college experience there. It was wonderful. And yes, hoops.
After a successful run as a college ball player, you then went to Europe?
Yeah, I then went to Europe and played overseas, and I played in Denmark for 5 years.
Okay.
And Israel for one.
So this was a like a professional league?
Professional league, yeah.
Professional women's league. Yeah. Tell me about that.
So in college we were, I did really well and got a lot of recognition, was named a Division II All-American. We went Division III, Division II, Division I for a couple of years and was named to different teams and things like that. And so Israel had reached out. There was a contact, a sports writer in the Boston area who had seen me play that then had helped different teams in Israel. They reached out. He connected me with like an agent there. They reached out. I was gonna go there. At the last minute, I'd say like maybe a couple weeks before I should have left, I decided to pull out of the contract and not go. I was too nervous leaving my family into a situation I didn't know. I was a little bit fearful. So then I pulled out and he said, the sports writer, I let him know that I made that decision. He then said, let me check with somebody from Denmark that I know used to coach there or play there. He reached out to her. She was from California, a girl named Jennifer Gross. And he reached out to her, and by chance, she was in Denmark visiting and had had lunch with her old coach that day, and they were looking for a point guard. It was like a crazy serendipitous last-minute thing. And I ended up in Denmark 2 weeks later. Yeah, I stayed there 5 years.
Final flicker of the candlelight, ring of fire burning bright, it all aligns in perfect sight. I sing to the moon again, listening to all I've said. She winks an eye and tilts her head. Waves come crashing in again. Why must I try so hard? To the moon again. this unend to all I've said. She winks an eye and tilts her head. Waves come crashing in again. Why must I try so hard? If you will run into the white, I will come find you on your darkest night and day.
What's the life of a professional women's basketball player?
In Denmark and in Israel, they're quite different. So I would say Denmark is less professional than the level in Israel.
Mm-hmm. But you can make a living?
Yeah. One of the things that was really wonderful about it is that they really, you arrive in a brand new culture, a brand new world, know no one, don't speak the language, and you're brought right into a kind of family feeling with a team. Mm. But everyone different, everyone living their separate lives, but everyone, how are you? Good to meet you, let's have dinner, trying to help you. And then they give you an apartment that's all set up, and so things are kind of taken care of. You don't have bills to pay.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have to figure out. They just kind of take
now,
care
of
you.
Is this sort of like the Danish like national team, or is this a professional club?
In Europe, they're made of, the professional leagues are like the top tier of the club teams.
Mm-hmm.
So you could play like third division or fourth division, or you could play the elite division, which would be the professional level. But in Denmark, not all of the players were professional.
Mm-hmm.
Only the American brought in was professional. Everybody else had jobs or went to school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they had rules. Like,
really?
Within the Danish league, that's how it's set up. You can only have a certain amount of European players, certain amount of Americans. And then
I suppose otherwise it would just be all Americans.
Right, if somebody had a bunch of money, they would get a bunch of... Right, Americans were seen as... tended to be the more dominant players, but Danes also... There's some phenomenal players over there that played 4 years Division I basketball in the States and then go back to Denmark and continue playing in the professional league. And then they can get paid in certain amounts, you know, just not... like they get different perks and things to their life. And then in Israel, it was very different where everyone was professional to a certain degree. They're allowed more Americans, more Europeans. That was, I'd say, extremely professional. You know, we're flying through in Europe on airplanes to our game, on private airplanes to our games, and
wow,
very bizarre and wonderful and very interesting.
Keep your head held high, see where you're looking.
I blew my ACL.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the moment?
Yes. When I blew my ACL?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was actually playing, my boyfriend, I had a Danish boyfriend of a few years, four years, he was the coach of the other team, and it was playoffs. And I blew my knee on a fast break at the foul line, doing it in and out. And it was bad, so I went down, like, screaming. Like, mm-hmm. I hadn't experienced something like that. And I had to be, he carried me off the floor. And, yeah, that was crazy because it also meant like I knew I wasn't going to be playing for a year. And at that point, it was my life and what would it mean? And mm-hmm. So I remember that well. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Do you look back on it now, like that time out from basketball, any value in that?
Absolutely. On multiple levels. One, another sort of need to fight back if I'm going to do what I love again. An ACL can take you out, some people, especially after I've already had so many injuries. So would I play again? And that over, you know, 10 months of fighting to come back and heal, that was a long process to go through and really good for me in the long run. But during that time away from the game, yes, it made me, I started going to a photography, this was the previous year, the club paid for me to go to a photography, it's called the Daohoi School. It's like classes that you can go and take and focus on a passion of yours in Denmark. And so the club paid for me. Yeah, they're amazing. So yeah, they're really wonderful. So you could go to like a 6-month program or a year program, and they're just set up really nice, and they're all over the country. So the club had paid for me the previous year to me tearing my ACL to go to one of these, the photography one, because that was something I was passionate about. So that had really opened up my passion of photography more. And so when I was injured, that was also there on my mind to continue to blossom or something I thought about. And so when I did make the transition to Israel, I think I was also inspired photographically what could happen there if I was there as an explorer, not just a basketball player, not just a tourist walking around, but visually. And so my injured time, I could feel all of those things happening at once. And I can remember talking, you know, to my boyfriend at the time and about these changes, like, I think I'm going to go to Israel and what to do next, and my interest in the visuals and feeling like that wasn't, that I needed to do more of that, that I was hungry for that.
Mm. So you attribute in some part your injury to opening up that space or needing to fill that creative space with something other than basketball.
And a very realistic slap in the face that I can't play basketball forever. This is my umpteenth time getting injured. I've had all of these surgeries, herniated discs.
Oh, man.
I mean, shots in the back. How, like, I can't do this forever, and I'm feeling a rising passion for these other things, and I've felt them in my past before. If I step into a new situation for new things to influence me, then I can, like, ride that momentum of that feeling of interest in a new place and give it more momentum.
Mm.
And maintain also, it made sense for me, basketball back at like a higher level, having come back from my ACL, go to Israel where I hadn't been and said no to out of fear, and explore what would happen if I were with all the interests that were going on in my mind in a place that was, to me, so there's so much contrast going on in Israel visually, where in Denmark visually there isn't a lot of contrast in that same way. Culturally, the things that play out in Israel versus it, for me, I would say, I mean, this is me projecting my perspective onto it, but that's how I was definitely feeling and seeing it, that the diversity and the eclectic nature of what exists in Israel felt very, like, stimulating visually and mentally.
And it was while you were in Israel that you actually had a series of photographs that were published in the New York Times.
When I went there, that kind of exploded. So, like, every day I would go and just, like, photograph and explore, and then I'd play basketball. It was like really awesome time.
how would you describe your music? Because it's...
I would describe the album Pearls as songwriter-based sonic landscape a little bit. I think I'm like blending some sonics and attention to little details and sparkles that I think make a big difference and support the lyrics.
Mm.
But it's like a songwriter, soft electronica backdrop. It's not a live band sound. It's a studio sound. So I use different things. And this was like a really big learning process for me to produce it, make it, record it. And so during the pandemic, I let myself explore all the things I was interested in. So it's really a blend.
Mm.
The full sound now with the full, now I have a full band playing the same songs and other ones. And I can say that that full sound is a songwriter psychedelic space rock. It's so it just has more, this is a softer version,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a softer version of what we do in the band.
Mm. There's like a positivity to a lot of the lyrics, but there's also a yearning, and there's a lot of movement. Almost all of them are like uplifting in some way and positive, but without being naive. They're also very straightforward without being simplistic.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear a little bit about your sort of artistic practice. How you approach song making, there's an obvious through line to me from like practicing basketball, mastering any sort of thing. Like, I should also note that apparently from your bio that I read,
mm-hmm.
that you really only started playing music when you were 33.
Yeah. But I've always been around music. I did actually play, like, in first grade I took fiddle lessons, although I stopped them. I took piano lessons for a few months when I was a little kid at some point. I took flute for a year in fifth grade. But my mother played guitar and sang. And my elder brother, Jed, played music and is a wonderful musician. And when we were actually little, while we were the balancer of going off with my dad, following him to gyms, we were playing and singing. We were singing music with my mother. So she would sing folk songs at home, and we had a buddy's band, it was called, which was named after her grandfather. And we went to coffee houses, and my mom played the guitar, and I was like six, I think, and I sang a couple songs with her, Jed on piano, Jeremy on harmonica.
And try to sleep again. Mind turned off, I dream within. Wish to drift away. Say the words and what they mean to me. Placed inside a melody. Will it help me find my way? Fear of letting go. You hit the light.
but still it glows. Hold me as I pray. Hopping clouds into an endless sky. Red horizon, lullaby. Hold me as I sway.
Songwriting, how is it similar, different to like your approaches to say photography or physical discipline?
The music, I think, requires more patience to get to a place where I trust that I'm following the right direction. Basketball and photography seemed a little bit more direct. Do this and you're going to get better. With music, I feel like there's some kind of patience, like things are coming in and gelling together in terms of writing, right? Like I'll pick up the guitar and start messing around on something, and I'm not someone that's going to write a song in 5 minutes. That's happened, I think, one time. But otherwise, I've let patience happen but I spend all my time with it. So the patience, you know, I'll be always thinking about that melody if I sit down and play. Or I record it and I play it in the car when I'm driving around and sing along to it. As far as usually the melody of the guitar, if I'm writing on the guitar, which I do mostly, comes first, and I'll just sing scratch over it, you know, and find like a melody that feels natural, an emotive for whatever I'm feeling in that, whatever that it's making me feel or what. And then you really, with all of them, a word or a phrase will come out, and then I'll know that that phrase is right. So it usually comes out, like I'll be messing around singing scratch over a certain melody and have a certain melody, but the words aren't right, and I'll just kind of keep going and do maybe find like a verse, keep going with scratch, then a chorus, maybe a bridge, what a bridge could feel good, and still singing scratch. And as I continue to do it, inevitably something comes out that feels totally right. It might not end up being the title, but it's like the phrase, and that's how I know that I'm then going to carry it forward to a full song, if that makes sense. So like, there's a song, Not This Time Around, I wrote, and the thing that stuck was it the timing when those tables were turning in? And that's like how the song starts. I wasn't sure what the name of that song was. I wasn't sure what it was completely about yet, but I knew that was important, and I carried that out then. So that tends to be how it comes. They're all coming from a space in me that is an emotional space. It's not they're not performative songs that I'm writing about an idea. They're coming from something that I'm experiencing inside emotionally that I'm expressing. I don't predetermine what that is when I sit down to write, but that's informed by my life experiences of what I'm going through or what I'm thinking about. And that's like the patience and the trust part that I was talking about earlier, is that I am someone that thinks about who I am and thinks about and wants to grow and wants to change. And so that is all a conversation in me all the time. And so when I'm writing, that's going to come out in bits regardless if I'm conscious of it or not. So I'm not going to say, I'm sad today. I'm going to write a sad song. But I sit down and write a song and end up writing about having a magic carpet to fly and in my feeling, go reach someone that you know you can't reach. So you get a magic carpet to go there. Mm-hmm. So that's coming from a feeling of some kind of loss in me, right? Mm-hmm. But it translates into this more, that would be a very much what you were talking about earlier, about yearning and the desire for something. And it's not, there's something heartbreaking in it, but it's positive, you know? It's about love. It's like leaning towards the loving side, and even though it's mysterious, you're still going there. So I think in that sense, that's very much who I feel I am. So that sense is coming out whether I'm necessarily conscious and sculpting that or not. I think there's like a resilience in the music that will come out, and if it's not coming out, it feels wrong to me, so I won't do it, you know? Or not necessarily consciously again, but I can say that now in reflecting back on them, you know, like, yeah, that's not the vibe I want to feel. Like, this is what I'm feeling and wanting to express. And there's something about a resilience and also a tenderness, but also grit too. And I would say the grit is not as present necessarily in this album than I think in playing with live instrumentation with others, the studio smooth engineering side of things is a little different for sure. Yeah, because resilience, we all experience the hardships of life, and we all can relate to the need for resilience in whatever form. And that's, to me, is gritty, you know? Any, like, coming, experiencing texture of world, getting cut by it, getting, you know, bleeding, falling down, standing up, keeping your head held high.